Shaken Shmosha. As opposed to saying, what could it have said? Va'alachta el Yerushalayim. Or va'alachta el Mikol HaMikdash. Or va'alachta, why is there a need for such a lengthy expatiation? El ha'mokom ha'sheyivcha Hashem elokecha l'shaken Shmosha. I just leave you with that question temporarily. The Torah continues. U'vasoel ha'kohen ha'sheyiyah v'yom ma'ayim. You come to the Kohen. And now there are, you'll see in a moment, several mitzvahs involved with Bikurim. One is initially a proclamation on the part of the farmer, and this is what he proclaims. You tell the Kohen, He garati ayom Hashem alokecha, ki vasi al haaretz ashenishma Hashem lavaseinu lasis lanu. So that term, He garati ayom, should remind you of another term which you're familiar with, Lel HaSeder, namely, the Haggadah. The term Haggadah, well, the term Higarati Ayom Hashem Elokecha has many translations in Tanakh. How many translations are you familiar with in the word Higarati or Lahagid? Lahagid means either to tell. Excellent. That would seem to be the simple shot over here. But what else does the word Lahagid? How'd you say? Oh, Gid. But that's with Gimel Yud Dalet. This is with a Hey. So it says Higarati Ayom Lahagid. We say, for example, Lahagid Baboge Chasecha. Don't we say that? Part of a davening, I think on Shabbos morning we say that. What does it mean over there? La'agid v'avokeh chastecha. Does that mean what you just translated? How do you just translate the word la'agid? To tell. So what about la'agid v'avokeh chastecha? What?
To proclaim.
The word la'agid also means to proclaim. What else? Another translation of la'agid. In the beginning of Ayikra, the Torah says that there's a din that if a person sees something and can be a witness to who a What does it mean over there? Imlo yagid, testify. Excellent. So the word lagid also means to testify. And the word lagid also has another translation. There are at least four or five translations, and they're critical. But here, what's happening is that he comes to the Kohen, and he tells him, He got it to Yayom Hashem Elokecha, Ki Vasi Al Haaretz, Hashenish Hashem Lavaseinu Lasis Lanu. And what is striking, already one of the Rishonim, Rabbi Nechaya, points out, there's something amiss over here, because what does he say? He got it to Yayom Lashem Elokecha. He says to the Kohen, I am telling your God. What, it's not his God? What kind of a language is that? He got it to Yayom Lashem Elokecha. Your God. That I came to Eretz Israel, that Hashem promised us. He swore to the Avos, I'm going to give to them. And now the Torah goes on. V'lokach ha-Kohen atenem yodecha. The Kohen takes the basket, puts it before the Mizbech, the basket with the Bikurim, with the first fruits. And then the Torah says, V'yanisa v'yamarta. Translate the word V'yanisa. How do you translate V'yanisa? To answer. Was there a question that was posed that one should answer the question? There's no question. So what does it mean V'yanisa here in this context? He's right. V'yanisa does mean to answer a question. But there's no question. You made a proclamation to the Kohen. You told the Kohen, he got to Hashem Elokecha, ki vasi alaretz ashenish b'Hashem l'avasein l'asas lanu. Question number one that I raised was the language of Hashem Elokecha. It's not my question. Rabbi Nevachai asked the kasha. Question number two, the Kohen takes the basket of Bikurim, puts it before the Mizbeach, v'yonisa v'yamarta. And then you answer. No one asked the question. Okay, we Jews don't have a problem. Even if they don't ask us a question, we have what to say. But that's not a shot in this possible. Was it me, Bionisa? So the Ibn Ezra asked this kasha. And the Ibn Ezra answers by referring to Psukim in Eov. One of the Svarim of Tanakh is called Eov. You're probably a bit familiar with him. My familiarity with Eov comes, I taught it a number of years ago. A very difficult sefer. It's a sefer that describes the tragedy of an individual who's very, very successful. And then Hashem decides to go ahead and literally rain on him every possible tragedy imaginable. He lost his family. He lost his property, he lost all of his wealth, he lost everything, and that sefer deals with the issue of what's called in halachic parlance, tzaddik v'ralo rasha v'tolo. How can a tzaddik be treated in such a fashion? Why would Hashem treat a tzaddik in such a fashion? And he has chaverim. Eov has many, many chaverim, many friends, and each one has a different approach to this problem. Or, in your language, why does God do bad things to good people? Is that the name of the book? I forgot the name of the book exactly. Or why do bad things happen to good people? Or what's known in the philosophical terms as theodicy. Theodicy. Theodicy is this issue. Tzadik v'ralo rasha v'tolo, which is all over Tanakh. It's in Eov. It's in Yirmiyahu HaNavi. It's in the Torah itself. Many, many Nevi'im dealt with this issue. So the Ibn Ezra says here, you know what it means, V'yanisa? Comparable to the Chaver of Iyo, when he was plagued with all of his turmoil, with all of his difficulties, what happened? V'yanisa v'amata. Vayan, Eliyah, Vayoma. Each one had what to say to Elisa, to Iyo's situation. Each one responded, and that's what's going on over here. What in heaven's name does that mean? Not in Yishmita, it's Asinat. What is the Ibn Ezra trying to tell us? I'll get to that in a moment. Derech Agav, a number of times I've been on planes, and somehow I always seem to sit next to priests, Baptists, Episcopalians. I'm not sure exactly why I'm always over there. Maybe it's a Solotone, because you're a priest, and he's a priest, and Min Motzeh is Mino. Not exactly the kind of priest that they are. So one day, I'm sitting on a plane, and the guy who is clearly a southern priest, he's got a very strong southern accent, he tells me, are you a member of the cloth? Namely, are you a priest, or a clergyman, or a rabbi, whatever you want to call it? So I didn't know what to say, but I said yes. So he tells me, can I ask you several questions on one of the books of the Bible? So I wasn't sure again I should answer yes, but I did answer yes. He said, well, I'm studying Job. Job? What is he talking about? I don't know what he's talking about. There's no book in Tanakh called Job. You ever heard of a book in Tanakh called Job? So he starts citing in English psukim from this book Job. And then I realized in a few minutes he was quoting Eov, which he calls Job. I think they generally pronounce it in English. How do they pronounce it? Job. But I didn't catch it right away. The guy knows the entire Sefer Eov in English by heart. I was thunderstruck. Trust me, I don't know the entire Sefer Eov, neither in English nor in Hebrew. Until he's not by heart. Anyway, that's just Derech Agav. So here's his question number two. The reason why I say this question, because Ibn Ezra, I'm blaming on Ibn Ezra. Ibn Ezra somehow tries to answer the question that we asked. Where's V'yanisa? What is he referring to? He refers to Job. He refers to Eo. Ma hakesher. I'll get that in a moment. What happens? So the farmer responds, and take a look at the psukim. This is a famous chapter. That this passage is quoted by Mishnah and Avim Sofim, and it really constitutes the bulk of the Haggadah on Leil HaSeder. What do we say on Leil HaSeder? We darshan a particular parsha. Which parsha do we darshan? Arami Ovi Ovi. That's the parsha we darshan. It's a Mishnah. Mishnah Avim Sofim says that the darshan be Arami Ovi Ovi at Sheikh Mukal HaParsha Kuba. That's what we darshan on Pesach night. So here we're darshaning that which is found where? Here in Kisava, in the context of the Mitzvah Bikurim, where this fellow now begins to somehow decide to articulate an entire parsha. Arami Ovi Ravi. By the way, that's also a difficult, those three words are not so simple. How do you translate Arami Ovi Ravi? Anyone know the translation? Machlobis Rishon. Had a little shot in Arami Ovi Ravi. One. Excellent. Wow. He's a big London. He's a Rav Chaim Brisker. You know he's Rav Chaim Brisker? His name is Rav Chaim. And he's like Rav Chaim Brisker. So one shot of Rishon is Arami Ovi Ravi. Arami Rotza Lehavid Et Avi. He wanted to destroy my father. Who's that referring to?
Lava.
Excellent. Lava wanted to destroy my father. Who's my father?
Yaakov.
Correct. Yaakov and his nemesis. His nemesis is Lava. That's one pshat. But there's another pshat. Anyone have an English? No. Arami Yovi Ravi. What's the other possible translation here? Arami Yovi Ravi. A wandering Aramean was my father. Ovei in the sense of wandering. How do you know that Ovei means wandering? You got to know Tanakh. You know the Tanakh, you're a bit in trouble. David HaMelech says in Tehillim, Ta'isi Kiseh Obed.
Shabbos Aveda.
Excellent. Beautiful. Shabbos Aveda. Excellent. So Obed in the sense of an item, an article that's lost. So a wandering Aramean was my father. Who's the one who wandered like an Aramean? Avraham Avinu. So Machlokes Rishonim, does this refer to Yaakov or Avraham? Okay, but lo mishaneh. I'm just Derech Agav telling you that because it's important piece of information. And Rav Chaim Brisker over here told us something significant. So it says, Arami Obed Ovi. What happens? This guy starts telling a ganze Geschichte. And he turns the Geschichte. A whole tale. What is this response to what the Kohen takes the basket of Bikurim? And what does he say? We went down to Mitzrayim. And guess what happened over there? Vayoreu osanu hamitzu vayanun. By the way, that's another problematic sentence. What should it say? Impossible. Not vayoreu osanu, but rather vayoreu. What does it mean? Let's start with that. What does it mean vayoreu? They what? They caused us harm. Ra. Vayoreu. So what should it say? Vayoreu lanu. What's vayoreu osanu? Another kashyas by Rishonim. What's vayoreu osanu hamitzu vayanun? So the answer to this kasha is fairly evident. You're aware during the Nazi period, unfortunately, I don't know if you read about Goebbels and many of the Nazi henchmen, I call them, Yimach Shemam V'Zichram, not only did they, Rachmanu Litzlan, maltreat us and kill us and gas us and throw us in concentration camps, but they also essentially attempted to defame and libel Klal Yisrael. Vayoreu osanu. How did they describe us? They described us, they depicted us as a bunch of misfits. We're a bunch of unfortunate, misfortunate types. And we're not worthy even of living. I don't know if you read or you read about the Iranians, how they describe Jews, Israelis. I don't know if you're aware of it, of that kind of literature. You have probably better things to do with your life, but I don't. So, because I'm a professional botanist, so therefore I read all these things. That's what it means here. Vayoreu osanu hamitzu vayanunu. You know what they did to us? They basically libeled us. And as a result, what are we? We're second-class citizens, we're third-class citizens. And they imposed harsh labor upon us. And what do? In Mitzrayim, we cried out to Hashem, and He heard our voice, and He took us out of Mitzrayim, and He brought us to Eretz Yisrael, and here it's hunky-dory, and now I have my farm, and I was able to grow and be productive, and now I have Bikurim, and I'm bringing it to you, and I should be Besimcha, and everyone else should be Besimcha, and we should all live happily ever after. What is going on here? So I asked several questions. Let me just review the questions. You have many more. I'm just asking three. One, I asked on the term, Higarati Yom Hashem Elokecha, what's the nature of this proclamation? And why Hashem Elokecha, your God? Two, the Kohen takes the tenor, puts it upon the Mizbech, and I respond. There's no question. What are you responding to? So the Ibn Ezra says, similar to Eov, and to his Chaver, who responded to his tragedy. What does that mean? And then this entire lengthy description, Aram Yogi Ravi, which is, by the way, only recited on Pesach night. The only other time during the year we recite such a lengthy peroration is Leil HaSeder and Bikur. So I want to answer these questions. The Yisod that I heard from my Rebbe, I had great Rabbi, I had outstanding Rabbi, and that's what I want to talk about, the Midah of Hakaras HaTov that one has to have to a Rebbe. Hakaras HaTov means gratitude. I would not be standing here, I would not have kimat any value whatsoever if not for my Rabbeim, who infused in me so many wonderful things, and as a result of that, I'm not Yitov today. But I want to, before I get to that, I just want to talk about this specific issue that I raised. Issue number one, this farmer does not feel connected to the Beis HaMikdash. He has a farm somewhere in the, let's say, a distant, remote area of Eretz Yisrael. What does he know about the pageantry, about the pomp and ceremony, Yerushalayim HaKodesh, of the Beis HaMikdash? It's not his thing. He's so distant from that. He has to deal with day-to-day issues of whatever economic issues that he confronts, lack of rain, yes rain, no rain, other types of very, what they call balabatashi kind of things. What is he connected to the Beis HaMikdash? So he basically is coming, sheepishly, feeling very distant, very remote, not connected, and he goes to the Kohen with his Bikurim, and tells him, he got it to Hashem, okay, that's your God, it's not my God. I'm not connected here. There's a disconnect. I'm not part of this entire scenario, it's not me. What does the Kohen do? The Kohen wants to show him it's not true. Every Jew is connected. Every Jew is ayanically bonded to Hashem Yisbarach, to the Beis HaMikdash, to all the pageantry of the Kohanim and the like. Kohen takes the Bikurim, puts it before the Mizbech, and the Jew is so taken by that. My Bikurim, from my little hick farm somewhere in Yehovitzville, are now being taken and placed to the Mizbech. So right away he responds to that situation. That's the analogy of Ezra's drawing to Vanisa Vamarta to Eo. Vayan, the Chaverim of Eo respond to his tragedy. Here also, he's responding to what the Kohen has done and to how he feels. He felt distant, he felt disconnected. And the Kohen says, incorrect, you're not disconnected. You're very connected. You are very much a part of Klal Yisrael, and we are an entire nation that has a glorious history, and he goes through the whole history of Klal Yisrael, and that's more or less a précis of what is happening over here. And that answers the questions that I raised to you. But I want to talk about, as I said, one specific midah, which is the foundation of all midahs, Hakaras HaTov. Rashi comments here, the very beginning, V'yamar De'elav, why do you tell this to the Kohen that you thank Hashem? She'eincha kofui tova. You want to show that you're not ingrate, that you have gratitude. The Chavis HaBavis writes, the most important quality that a Jew should nurture and cultivate is the quality of gratitude, of Hakaras HaTov. I want us to thank Hashem for everything that Hashem has given us, for every breath that I have. I want us to thank one's parents, one's mother, one's father. I want us to thank one's chaverim, one's siblings, the rabbeim that people have. We owe them enormous Hakaras HaTov. So I just want to share with you a number of very fundamental vignettes that I have in my background regarding Hakaras HaTov. There was a Rebbe in Yeshiva University who died a number of years ago. He was 104 years old. That's quite a bit of longevity. Halavai, all of you should be zochet to that. Tarichas Yom V'Shonim. That's Hashem. In good health the whole way, the entire way. This Rebbe was pretty healthy the entire way. This Rebbe went to the Bir Yeshiva. His name was Abgershin Yankelovich. I am to know him because I grew up in the Bronx in New York. The Bronx, again, is a borough of New York City. Even though at one time I said the Bronx all of Hashem, but now I heard it's coming back. People have no room to live in Manhattan, so they're moving to the Bronx. You familiar with the Bronx? Probably never heard of it. Where are you from?
Great
Neck. You never heard of the Bronx, no doubt. That is a possibility. But no, whatever the case is, there is such a borough, you can trust me. And I grew up in that borough, and this Gershon Yankelovich lived there in the Bronx. And in the course of getting to know him, I discovered he was born in Europe, he learned in the Mir Yeshiva in Europe, and then came to the shores of America. Baruch Hashem was able to escape from the Nazi scourge and the like. And he actually was someone of a very strong person. And he told the following story, which was said over at his Levaya. I was present at his Levaya, at his funeral. When he was 104 years old, he passed away. And the following story was told. When the Mir Yeshiva was basically running away from Europe from the Nazis, so they ultimately ended up in Shanghai. I assume you're somewhat aware of that. The Mir Yeshiva in Shanghai probably saved Torah in Europe, in America, and Eretz Yisrael, because the Talmidim of the Mir Yeshiva, so subsequent to their being in the Mir Yeshiva, became great Talmidei Chacham, just like Mitzvah Hashem, all you are going to become, great Talmidei Chacham, and you're going to save the world as well. Ain't Lishum Safek, I have no doubt in my mind. So they then, as I said, spread out all over the place. So this, Rav Gershon Yankelovich, was going together with a large group of Mir Talmidim, several hundred Talmidim, and they were able to get on the last train. I think the train was called the Vladivostok-Siberian Railway. I don't recall the exact name of the train, and I believe, I'm not mistaken, there's a fellow in Baltimore, Kranzler, who's written extensively about this topic. Very fascinating to observe what happened then. And they got on the train. So most of them got on the train, except for a few, how shall I put it? Schleppers. How do I translate schleppers? A few not so well-functioning kind of guys. The reason why they were not so well-functioning, because they were iluyim. Iluyim means they were geniuses. A little bit, shall we say, out of the box, and slightly dysfunctional in terms of practical things that people do. There are people like that. I mean, sometimes meet Talmidei Chachamim who are really incredible minds, but they're not completely, when it comes to simple people like me, have no problem. We know what to do, and we go ahead and carry out what we have to do properly. But there are people whose minds are elsewhere. And so there were three, actually, and afterwards there were actually two quote-unquote Talmidei Chachamim, great Talmidei Chachamim. I even know who they are, because I sort of slept information out of him, and found out, I was shocked, who were apparently late for this train. And the train starts moving along. Now, these trains were very heavy, and it was chug, 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 chug. You know, the old chuggy type trains, you know what I'm talking about? Probably some pictures in them, I'm sure, videos, whatever it may be. And it's literally, but starting to pick up speed, chugging along, and then he sees these two guys, they're running with all their pekalach, half of it on the floor, and half of it, they're all disheveled and completely, and they see the train moving ahead, they're going to miss the train, and they'll be essentially goners. What does he do, Rav Yoshe Yonker Lovitz? He's a strong guy. He's actually a wrestler. Very strong guy. He physically opens up the doors of the train that 10 guys could open up. But sometimes Hashem gives a person strength when it's necessary, and sometimes people have kochot that they don't even know they have, especially during times of tribulation and trial, what have you. Gives him strength. He opens up the doors and he tells the chaver in the train, hold those doors open. I'm jumping out and getting these two shlepas. I use the word advisedly. Don't take it the wrong way. The big top of the chacham, but shlepas in the sense that they weren't completely functioning, as I mentioned a moment ago. He goes, jumps off the train, picks them both up, one in his left hand, one in his right hand, they with all their pekalach, all their zachin, who knows what. And literally starts running back to the train, jumps on the train back with them, and saved their lives. The next 40 years, so they, after Shanghai, they came to different places, these two great Talmidei Chachamim, I'm talking about great Rashi Yeshiva, and every time they saw Rav Yoshe Yonker Lovitz, they were in tears. For obvious reasons. They saved their life. But here's what happened. It was the following exchange that took place between them. The Torah tells us in Shmos that Moshe Rabbeinu, if you remember, he was a fugitive. You remember the story with the Mitzri, and he had to run for his life. Goes to Midian. Who does he meet there? His father-in-law, and ultimately his wife. And everything is hati-tati. Wonderful situation. Gets married, Sipara, kinds of business. So the Medrash then tells us at one point, Hashem tells Moshe, I want you to go down to Mitzrayim and be the redeemer of Klal Yisrael. So Moshe Rabbeinu says to Hashem, listen, I got something to do before I can do that. What's that? Hashem tells him, I got to ask my father-in-law. I got to tell him I'm leaving. I got my wife over there. I married, great marriage. I got to ask permission. Why, said Hashem? Hakara Satov. Because I owe gratitude to my father-in-law. And he took me in. I'm a fugitive. And I got married there. I found a wife. Hakar Satov. So there's a statement in Chazal to describe that event, that scene over there. The statement is, and I'll just cite it for you. Moshe Rabbeinu said to Hashem, Yisrael, that guy, Pasach li Pesach, he opened up the door, as it were. I am obligated to him my life. I'm not quoting the entire Chazal, but more or less. My life I owe to him, because he basically saved my life. Fugitive, running away from Paramelech Mitzrayim, the great viceroy, the great king, the great sovereign. And now he provided me with solace and refuge or what have you, and I got married. I'm machayit in my life. So every time these two mirrors saw Rav Yoshe Yonker Lovitz, they told him the following. Kvodo patach lanu petach, chayenu anachnu chayamim lecha. We owe you our lives. We've been out for 40 years. It's called Hakaras HaTov. Showing gratitude for something, in this case, people's lives being saved. So Rashi here says, in the context of this mitzvah Bikurim, V'yamarta lecha, what is this fellow, the farmer, coming to the Mishalim, what does he say to Hashem? He got it to you, Hashem Elokecha. He tells him that I'm thankful for Hashem that you provided me, Akara Sato, with all the productivity, with this beautiful basket of fruit. And Rashi says, this has to be expressed. Sheincha kofui tova. When a person owes someone a favor, you should express it. You should openly acknowledge it. You should indicate that very clearly. So now I just want to share with you a number of stories of Akara Sato that I am familiar with, that I collected over the years. And Akara Sato is, as I said, a very fundamental midah. I was okay in Eretz Yisrael in 1971-72 to attend the shiurim of one of the Gdolei Ador. When I was here, I spent a year in yeshiva in Eretz Yisrael, a year and a half actually I was here. And it was actually, for me, how shall I describe it? The yeshiva I was in was like my home base, and from there I, shall we say, traveled all over the place. I needed a place to stay, to bunk, to berth. That was my place. But what did I do? Once a week I went to Panovich to hear the shiur of Rav Shach Zatzal. Once a week I went to Mir Yeshiva to hear Rav Chaim Shmuel Levitz, his shmuzin. Once a week, I went to hear Rav Nachum Persovitz, the Rashi of the Mir, son of Rav Chaim and Yevomis. Motzei Shabbos, I went to hear. I went to Rechol Balatanya Meir Shorim. I had to sneak out of the yeshiva and learned the Sefer Tanya the entire night. Every Motzei Shabbos, I left at 12:30. I snuck out of the yeshiva, as it were, and I went to Rechol Balatanya, and there with a Chabad fellow, who was a big Talmud Chacham, learned with him the entire Sefer Tanya in a year and a half. I think I told you that already. Maybe you didn't hear from me. And then in the morning we daven, and then we have breakfast. You know what breakfast was? Hard-boiled eggs and booze. That was the breakfast. Every Sunday morning. You're involved with the breakfast. I was kidding. I didn't exactly understand the combination, the hard-boiled eggs with the booze, but the booze was quite good. The kids are... Hard-boiled eggs weren't bad either. I did this for a year and a half. I learned the entire Sefer Tanya. Just one comment. So I used the experience to be exposed to Eretz Yisrael, all of its beauty and glory and splendor, and I fell in love with Eretz Yisrael. Anyway, one of the things I also did, there was a great Gadol Yerushalayim named Rav Gusman. Rav Yisrael Gusman, Zechatar Dibracha, he went through the Holocaust. He lost his only son, who was killed in front of him by the Nazis, a young boy. Now, I think there's a fellow here who won a very famous prize in mathematics. I don't know if you know who he is. Professor Alman. You know that name? You don't know that name? I have to ask Rabbi Olshin. It's a big mumchen in this matter. And he once sat shiva also for one of his children, and Rabbi Gusman came to Menachem Avla because Professor Alman used to come to that shiur of Rabbi Gusman that I was in the 70s. Anyway, so he once told how he has survived World War II in the Vilna forest by subsisting on all kinds of wild growth. Rav Gusman, he knew which plants to eat and which one to avoid. Why? Because years ago, he grew up in Vilna. He was on the bezel of Chaim Reza at the age of 19 years old, a genius. An evilly, a great god of Torah, an unbelievable giant in Torah. And one day, Chaim Reza takes him for a walk in the forest to speak to him about plants and berries and all kinds of things. He didn't understand what Chaim Reza wanted from him. And then when he was a partisan during the Nazi period and he was literally running away for his life, he subsisted completely on plants and berries. Where did that come from? Rav Chaim Elzer, who taught him which ones you can eat, which ones are edible, which ones are not edible. And when the Germans marched to Vilna in 1941, so he and his wife fled actually with their baby daughter to the forest of Vilna. And then he recalled the conversation with Rav Chaim Elzer. But the reason why I'm telling you the story is the following. One day I see Rav Gusman watering the garden in the yeshiva. I said to myself, what is the Rosh Yeshiva doing watering the garden? In the yeshiva, I was in Itri had a professional gardener. Wow. Full time. 24/7. He didn't have a professional gardener. Okay, it was a smaller yeshiva. Uvachalza, what's he watering? So I asked him. So he says, you know why I do it? I have a karas hatov to the plants and berries that through them I survived the Nazi scourge. So I asked him my silliness. Yeah, you would tell me I'm silly, I know. I don't blame you. I asked him, but these aren't the same plants and berries that saved you. It's a different group of plants and berries. So he said, what are you talking about? Ayo HaKoras HaTov, the plants and berries. And that's why I watered the garden. What do you say to that?
Unbelievable.
Literally unbelievable. Wow. And he was referring to his years in the Vilna forest. That's the mitzvah of HaKoras HaTov. I had a lot of connection with a number of, as I said, a number of Gedolei Yisrael. And one of the Gedolei Yisrael I had a connection with, I spoke about him last week, was Rav Avraham HaKohen Pam, Zechatzar Debracha. For many years, when I was a young man, Bar Mitzvah, I went on Friday to hear his Sichot, to hear his Shmuzin, the Torah Das in Williamsburg, in Brooklyn. And I traveled from the Bronx, I mentioned, 2 hours on the train, an hour and a half. I spent there, had myself a slice of pizza, hung out over there, 2 hours back, and it was Erev Shabbos, and then Shabbos came in. So he had a big influence on my life. And so someone once asked Rav Pam, whether you sing Shom Aleichem when Yom Tov falls out on Shabbos. I don't know if you had that problem. What do you do? What's your practice? You sing Shom Aleichem when Yom Tov falls out on Shabbos? So, of course, the answer is there are different minhagim. Some people sing Shalom Aleichem, some people don't sing Shalom Aleichem. And that's what he answered Rapam. He said there are varying minhagim related to this matter. So Rapam said, he himself says, I don't sing Shalom Aleichem. So they said, okay, but do you do any singing? So what is the answer? Yes. Eishes Chayim, I sing. So they asked Rapam, why? So he said, what? Even the kasha is no kasha. Hakaras HaTov to my wife. That's an ongoing 24/7 kind of enterprise. That's not something you're mevater on, even when Yom Tov falls out on Shabbos. By the way, why would you not sing Shalom Aleichem if Yom Tov falls out on Shabbos? What's the problem?
We're not singing on Shabbos.
Friday night, you don't sing Shalom Aleichem?
Yeah.
Both them?
So we're not grateful to our wives and Yitran.
You're asking a different kasha. Yeah. Why is Shechai as long as someone on Friday night? That's a very good kasha. So what's the answer to that kasha? What? What's the answer? That's a very good question. Rav Chaim Brisker, he's at work here.
It's very hard to prepare for Shabbos.
What was that?
A lot of time the wife doesn't know cooking.
Excellent. Do you hear that? But she works the whole week, he's going to tell you.
More of Shabbos, more of Shabbos.
Okay, there's one to talk about that, but that's not the issue I'm discussing. But Yom Kippur falls out on Shabbos, people don't sing Shalom Aleichem because they don't want to insult. Who are they going to insult? They sing Shalom Aleichem, they're insulting Yom Kippur. So they don't sing it. But Eishes Chayim, the person has to sing. Why? Because Hakaras HaTov. We give you a few other statements in Chazal that reference to this matter. I was zochet to hear Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. I actually, one of the great Lili Ador, you may have heard the name soon, hopefully. Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. So in 1983, my wife and I were able to have a little visit with Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky in Muncie. You ever heard of Muncie? In my benching, it says, "Uvnei Muncie Yir Hakodesh Meherav Yomeinu." Some have Uvnei Yushalayim. But in my benching, it says, "Uvnei Muncie Yir Hakodesh Meherav Yomeinu." Anyway, so we went to Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, and in the course of going to him, I asked him the following kasha. I asked him, "Why is it that Yisro merited to have such a son-in-law like Moshe Rabbeinu?" Now, you might say it's a foolish question. I thought it was a good question, and I asked him to go to Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky. Why was he zeichet to have Moshe Rabbeinu, the greatest Navi? Lo kam Yisrael, Navi ke Moshe Rabbeinu. Why was he zeichet? He's a Yisrael, what is he? He's a priest. Chazal called him a Kaimer. Kaimer Lava the Zara. So Rabbi Yaakov answered, you know what? Hakar Sato. I looked at him very quixotically, and he explained to me, the Gemara says, in Barabasa, famous Gemara, the Gemara says when Paro first addressed, quote unquote, the Jewish problem. You remember the psukim by Yochanan Melech Chodesh al Mitzrayim, Asher Lo Yada Asyel said they have a Jewish problem. Every single world leader has a Jewish problem. Somehow we all have Hatzlacha, tremendous bracha, tremendous Hatzlacha. They don't know what to do with us, how to deal with us. So we have a Jewish problem. So the Gemara says in Baal Basra, he had several advisors. Who are they? Bilam, Eam, and Yisrael. So what did Bilam suggest? Kill all those Jews, persecute them, get rid of them, obliterate them. We have a few nations that would like to do that to us, like we're surrounded by them. A lot of these nice fellows, some of our cousins. So the Gemara says he was killed. Eo Shosak. Eo was quiet. What happened to him? Nidon be Yisurim. What was he punished? He had Yisurim, as I described earlier. Terrible Yisurim. Yisro Barach. Yisro decided, I'm getting out of here. I don't need any part of this. This is not my Esed. And he became, or his descendants became members of the Sanhedrin on the Harabais. That's a Gemara. I think it's a Gemara in Seita, the first parable. So Yisro gave him a great deal by running away. He became, from being a chief advisor to Paramount Mitzrayim, one of the greatest rulers on earth. What happens? He now is a fugitive. So Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky sent over to me a Medrash, and I later found in Shmos Rabbah. The Medrash says that Yisro was motivated by Hakaras HaTov. Because Yosef HaTzadik rescued the Egyptians and their neighbors. How can we repay his kindness with cruelty? So Moshe comes to Midian. What does it happen? He rises at a well. I read the psukim where what happens? You remember the daughters of Yisro are being harassed by other shepherds. Moshe Rabbeinu comes to their aid, gives them water. They come home. What do they say? Ish mitzvi hitzilonu miyad haro'im. An Egyptian guy saved us. Vigam dalol dalol lono vayashkes haton. He drew water for us and even he watered the sheep. So Yisro then asks, Ve'ayo. So where is he? Why is it you left a man? Call him. Invite him to supper. Let him have a meal. So what was Yisro saying? Said Rabbi Yaakov. Where's your hakaras hatov? Where's your gratitude? The man saved you. He showed you unbelievable kindness. And you don't return the favor? So Rabbi Yaakov told me that Yisrael was zochet to Moshe Rabbeinu because of hakaras hatov. Wow. I was flabbergasted by that pshat. Hakaras hatov. As I mentioned to you before, the Chavos HaVavos says the most fundamental midah of all midos is hakaras hatov. A person who doesn't have hakaras hatov is essentially nishkin mensch. He's not a human being. He's missing his very essence. And all this is embedded in one pasha, Bikurim. Rashi says, V'yamata elav shein chal kofi tova. You have to demonstrate you're not what? A kofi tova. What does kofi tova mean? You're not an ingrate. You're not someone who has no gratitude. On the contrary, you have gratitude. Just want to mention, many times, my family was zochet to have Rabbi Yashiv, Zecher Tzadik Livracha. You heard of Rabbi Yashiv, on the Gdolei Ador, as a sandik for grandchildren. How are we zochet to have Rabbi Yashiv as a sandik for our grandchildren, and for other grandchildren of my family? So I have a mechutin. How do I translate mechutin? My son is married to his daughter. What's that in English? No word. Thank you. No word from the chutn. So I have a mechutin who's a, what do you call him? Co-in-law? That is outstanding English. I have a mechutin. So he's a surgeon in Hadassah Hospital. He's a gastroenterologist. Many years ago, Rabbi Yashiv needed surgery for his gallbladder. So they looked for a doctor, a surgeon, and they wanted someone out of the system. They don't trust the system. And they wanted someone out of the system. My Mechutin is an American. He's here for so many, many years, but he practiced in America also many, many years. And he did the surgery free of charge. He refused to take a shekel from Rabbi Yashiv. He felt he had, what a schus, to operate on the Gadol Hador and to extend his life for many, many years, which he, Baruch Hashem, was able to live many, many more years. So from that point on, Rabbi Yashiv said to him, he wanted to pay Rabbi Yashiv. He was really very unhappy that he's not paying for the surgery. So Manuhut says, no, I'm not taking a shekel, I'm not taking a penny. And so he said, yeah, I'll give it to you in euros, other currencies. You shouldn't put him open. So he said, Rabbi Yashiv, to him, what can I do for you? Can I do anything, any matana? So he said, one favor I would like to ask. When my grandchildren are born, could the Rav be the sandik for the grandchildren? So Rabbi Yashiv said, any time you call me during the day, I'll be the sandik. Why? So we were zochet. Rabbi Yashiv usually was only the sandik early in the morning, right after the minyan, right after davening, and after that, he's locked up in his room, sitting and learning all day and all night. For us, 12 o'clock, 2 o'clock, 3:30, 4 o'clock, we try not to do it that way. We didn't really make life miserable for him. Any time we wanted, he was the sandik. Why? I'll end with this. Was very makir tov to Chabad. The Rabbi Shulevi found the Chaim Levracha. He found Sovim of Chaim Riska, even though he's sitting here. But he found Sovim of Chaim Riska of his grandfather in Poland. Give it back to the Rav. The Rav was makir tov to the Rabbi Shulevi the rest of the time. Many different ways. That's the bida that we have to nurture and cultivate across the world. And I can tell you that my Akar Satov is certainly to my parents, Zecher Tzadik and Livracha, but primarily to my Rabbeim, preeminently to Rabbeim I had, because without them, I'd be a goner. I'd be a lost soul. Ta'isi kiseh oivei. I don't know what I would do. You know what my Rabbeim did for me? They turned me into a mensch, into a shtikel ben teira, someone has a bit of a reach of teira. You know what a reach of teira means? A shnek of teira. What does Shmecha tell you? A scent. How do you translate scent? You go into a balsam, you go into a perfumery, and what happens? They come out with a shtikl reach, a little scent. That's what Maravain, they gave me a shtikl scent of color. Guess why you are here, all of you? To get not just a reach, you're going to become great Talmidei Chacham. You, great Talmidei Chacham. Isn't that Pashim? He's master. So Hakaras HaTov is the midah to nurture and cultivate Be'ez Hashem. If you have Hakaras HaTov for your parents, for your siblings, for your chaverim, for your aben, kavuchimeh, menoshe kavuchimeh, for whom? For kavuyachol, yubani shalom. Alabai, you can give Hakaras HaTov. We should be zeyde, to be the kavuchimeh, Mashiach Tzikeinu, very good.